Vic, thank you. Let me know when you're ready for me to proceed.
This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay.
Claire, you can go ahead and get started. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope everybody is enjoying your summer, and I want to thank you for joining this open meeting of our task force on language access and the implementation of the language access plan. Today, in a nutshell, we are taking another big step in our continuing effort to improve language access for California's 7 million limited English proficient residents and potential court users. I am always grateful for our task force members, our judicial council staff, and members of the public who follow this for your interest and for your dedication in the work that we're doing. So goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, remember that today's meeting is an open meeting and is being recorded. Please say your name before speaking so we can recognize you. Place your phone on mute if there is background noise. And don't put us on hold because we may end up listening to 1970s music, and that would be bad, even if it were not a recorded meeting. So I want to give a special a note of appreciation to anybody who's a member of the public who's listening in. We appreciate that you are interested in what we're doing. We are grateful that you are joining us. And we have quite a substantive agenda today with these two rules, so we're just going to start right now. Now let me turn it over to Elizabeth, who's going to do roll call.
Thank you, Justice Cuellar. Judge Covarrubias?
Yes, I'm here.
Naomi Adelson? Judge Austin?
I'm here.
Kevin Baker?
Here.
Angie's on the line. We heard her earlier. Justice Bernier is here in the conference room. Tracy Clark, I understand, is here. Judge Court is not able to make our meeting. Judge Gard is not able to make it as well. Anna Maria Garcia is out of town. Susan Marie Gonzalez. Judge Hayashi.
Here.
Thank you. Janet Hudek. Joanne Lee.
Here.
Yvette Pena is on the call. Justice Pena.
Here.
Thank you. Justice Brenner.
Here.
Mike Roddy.
This is John Conklin. I'm not sure you called my name, but I was just at a kickback meeting with Mike Roddy, so he might not have been able to call in yet.
Thank you for letting me know, Judge Conklin. Janine Tucker is not able to attend this meeting, and I believe we have Dr. Valdez on the line.
Yes, I'm here.
Jose, thank you. Jose Varela is on the line. Judge Walsh.
Here.
David Yamasaki.
Here.
Justice Zelon.
I'm here.
Thank you. And we have a quorum, Justice Cuellar.
Terrific. That's fantastic. So let me go straight to the approval of the minutes. We had the Judicial Council staff send out draft minutes from our May meeting held via conference call. The staff sent out those minutes on August 2nd, and I'd like to see if there is a motion to approve the minutes of the May 10th, 2017 meeting.
Yamasaki moves approval.
Terrific. Do we have a second?
Conklin,
second. Terrific. Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any votes against? Okay. The minutes are approved. Thank you very much. So the heart of the meeting, which now we come to, is two proposed rules that are going to implement some important pieces of the language access plan recommendations. I don't know about you, but when I talk about the language access plan and its dozens and dozens of recommendations, I often find it helpful to focus on some pretty concrete things. I give people four examples, and I say, for example, previously there was no plan that included an indication that trial courts should have language access representatives or they should have a complaint process, and the language access plan includes that. That brings us to today, because our rules that we are putting before you today, Rule 2.850 and Rule 2.851, address precisely those recommendations. The first one, 2.851, requires each court to establish a complaint form and procedures that allow court users who have limited English language skills to submit a complaint to the language access representative about the court's provision of language access services or its failure to provide language access services. This is not the only piece of our strategy, obviously, but it's a hugely important piece of the strategy. It's kind of a linchpin for a lot of other things we're doing. And then the second rule, rule 2.850, requires that each superior court designate a language access representative that is part of what makes the complaint process work and also serves a lot of other purposes in helping out court users, helping out staff and judicial officers. So this is a big deal. We've worked on this quite a bit, and I'm grateful for the input that's been received from folks who have provided input, and I know that Judge Austin, Judge Hayashi, Yvette Peña have reviewed the public comments received and have helped us develop responses. So what's going to happen now is I'm going to turn to Judge Austin to go through the public comments and go over the changes that we have made in the proposal. So through the LAP monitoring subcommittee that has been deeply engaged in this, and all the members basically have been getting lots of information and notice about how this was evolving, we've tried to channel all that input into this version. We have been, as Judge Austin will share, in close consultation with others whose support we kind of need to get this to the Judicial Council, particularly the PJ's committee and the CEO's committee. And there's more that you're going to hear in detail, but I'll just underscore that our paramount goal has been to actually have the complaint process to make it be meaningful, to help people, and ultimately how this task force implements that rule, if it goes forward, is going to be a process that is going to require additional input and engagement from people. So how we advise trial courts to do the best that they can to do this, how we give them a little bit of a gloss to understand everything that's implied there. We have a lot of control over that. But for the moment, the question is, do we have this proposal go forward so that it can go to the rules subcommittee of the Judicial Council and then to the Judicial Council itself so that it can be approved? So with that, let me turn it over to Judge Austin.
Thanks, Justice Cuellar. Why doesn't everybody turn to your materials? You have in there, you have the final, you're going to have the draft council report, the proposed draft rules, and the public comment chart. They're all in your materials, and hopefully everybody's had a chance to go through those. And if not, you can refer to those as we go along as I track what we ended up doing. Just taking you back a little bit, earlier this year, the staff drafted the invitation to comment for the two new rules. That's 2.850 and 2.851. The task force approved the invitation to comment on January 20th of 2017, and that was to go to the Judicial Council's Rules and Project Committee. That's RUPRO. For all of you that aren't familiar with all those little initials, that we don't know exactly what all of them mean. I know a lot of people aren't involved directly within the court system. RUPRO is the one that advises us on all changes to rules of court and other issues. It's high up on the list of the main committees that advise the Judicial Council. At its February 24th meeting, RUPRO approved the invitation to comment to go out for public comment. And the comment period was from the end of February, I think, until end of April. So we got all the comments in by the beginning of May. We received no public comments to the proposed Rule 2.850. That's the one about designating a language access representative. I think part of it is because all the courts had already designated a language access representative. The rule itself really just makes clear that this is an ongoing requirement, so everybody's going to have one going into the future. And I don't think that was controversial in any way or anybody had any ideas to make that happen. As to Rule 2.851, that's the complaint rule, we received a total of 12 public comments from a number of different kinds of stakeholders, including some from individual courts, from legal services providers, from the Joint Rules Subcommittee of the Trial Court Presiding Judge Advisory Committee, and the Court Interpreters and the Court Executive Advisory Committee, that's SEAC. So those two put together have a joint Rules Advisory Committee made up of CEOs and PJs, and they provided comment as well. In response to the comments and the suggestions, the following changes have been made to the Rule 2.851. And we did it, we actually working with staff and looking at all the comments and working through some, and I'm going to talk to some more about some in more detail as we go along. But we did it to try to see if we can make a rule that is most likely to succeed and get approval through RUPRO and get approval that would be by the council itself, one that will provide the complaint services and the complaint process that, as far as I can tell, is the first kind of administrative complaint formal process that the courts have adopted on any different item, let alone in interpreters for anything. I don't think we really have one that's been in place in the court system. So it's really kind of groundbreaking in many ways. So we wanted to do it in a way that is comfortable for the court users, and which is most important, but also comfortable for administration and for others that are concerned with making sure that the complaint process is a successful one. So it's kind of exciting. It's a little historic, I think, when you look at what this complaint process does in a way that really isn't being addressed in any other areas of court operations. The proposed rule, it's been modified based on the suggestions to include the following language. Language access complaints may be submitted orally or in other written formats. However, use of the court's local form is encouraged to ensure tracking that complainants provide full information to the court. Both to ensure tracking so that we're able to figure out exactly how many of these complaints are made, and there's a reporting requirement at the end, and that the complainants provide full information to the court so they make sure that the complaint forms themselves are allow people to be able to fully write down what the complaint's about. The proposed rule has been modified to indicate that the complaint form should be made available for free, both in hard copy at the courthouse and online on the court's website, where court users can complete the form online and then submit it to the court by hand or postal mail or by email. The rule has been modified to say that the form used by the court should include the court's mailing address and an email contact to show court users how they may submit a language access complaint. And it's also been modified to say that court user complaints regarding denial of court of a court interpreter for a courtroom proceeding for pending cases should be, and it goes on to talk about that, but we wanted to make that qualification that is for a courtroom proceeding for pending cases should be treated in a different way than other ones. The proposed rule has been modified to say the court must report to the Judicial Council on an annual basis the number and kinds of complaints received, the resolution status of all complaints, and any additional information about complaints requested by the Judicial Council staff to facilitate the monitoring of the strategic plan for language access in the California courts. We received other comments that we didn't end up incorporating the suggestions. Legal services providers and other commentators provided a number of suggestions that would require clarification of the scope and intent of the rule in the language access complaint process. Some of those, we had the language access complaint process is administrative in nature, and complaints will not be included in the case files. And as with any court user complaint, courts will maintain court records and maintain the privacy of individuals who submitted a complaint outside the context of the complaint. So it won't be in the case files. It'll be outside of the normal workings of the internal. It'll be in the internal processes of the court, but it won't be in the case files available to opposing parties or for other people. Complaints will be submitted must be submitted in English. There was concern about that, both expressed through the comment period and in the later that you ended up. Everybody got the comments that Kevin and Anna Marie were made as to proposed changes that we got just a couple of days ago about it being in English. That does require that the form itself be translated into the top to eight languages, but we've left it so it's up to local courts to determine if the form should be translated to additional languages based on local population needs. Another suggestion made by those groups were that the language access complaint process is meant to be administrative and not adjudicative, and that's true, and I think that's very clear from the rule. We didn't make any additional tweaks to the rule, though, to reflect that. We also ended up making some recent additional changes in response to comments and suggestions from JRS. That's the Joint Rules Subcommittee of the PJs and the CEOs who had, as you'll see in the comments, strongly opposed and their initial comments, opposed the rule. But then after a great deal of time and effort and working with them, we kind of came up to with some changes that would address some of their concerns, and I think that they're pretty much satisfied with those going forward. The courts must implement the rule as soon as reasonably possible, but not later than December 31st, 2018. So we kind of extended it out a little ways, gives a little more flexibility for the courts to be implementing this new processes. We relax the time requirements for courts to respond to language access complaints. We added clarification language to the advisory body notes. If a complaint alleges action against a court employee that could lead to discipline, the court will process the complaint consistent with the court's applicable memorandum of understanding and personnel policies and other rules. That was something that was a real concern when we began investigating what it was that the PJs and CEOs were finding objectionable in the rule, that they didn't want to, they're involved in memorandums of understanding with court interpreters. There are many of other labor rules, and they didn't want to have problems that these complaint processes might create with those processes. So we made sure that in the user notes that that people were advised that that's the case, that they're not to interfere with existing agreements that are in place. For non-complicated language access related complaints, we indicated that they could, that if they can be resolved quickly, a written response to the complainant indicating that the complaint has been resolved will suffice as both the acknowledgement of the complaint and notice of the outcome. Those were meant to address simple complaints that could be dealt with very quickly and not have to go through a more formalized process. We also in subdivision D5, indicated that when appropriate, a written response to the complainant indicating that the language access complaint has been resolved will suffice as notice of the outcome. That the court should maintain the privacy of the individuals named in the complaint. And also in subdivision D7, we added language that reporting to the Judicial Council regarding the overall numbers, kinds, and disposition of language access-related complaints will not include the names of individuals or any other information that may compromise an individual's privacy concerns. So we made sure that the notes also reflected the fact that this is something that should be private and not available to other parties or litigants in the case. In addition to those changes to Rule 2.851, the model procedures and the model procedures under the rule, in response to commentator's suggestions, the following changes have been made to the model complaint form. The model form is going to be revised to include more space for descriptions, so they can put more into the form as to what it is that is the problem that's being complained about. Page 2 of the model complaint form we modified as suggested to say other problem with court staff related to language access, so that there'd be a spot there that would be able to include that information as well. One thing I really want to emphasize is that, and I have brought it up as I've done my presentation, there were significant outreach efforts that were made over the past, it's been 2 or 3 months now, and lots of discussions were held with members of our group. I want to thank Judge McCabe, who was really helpful in dealing with many of the issues that were presented by the PJs and the CEOs in trying to figure out how to come up with a workable option that is acceptable for both the users and the court administration, and makes it much more likely that we're going to get this thing passed through all the way through to the council and approval by the council. And we worked a lot with the chairs of JRS and council staff and RuPro staff. There's been a great deal of effort that's been done by our subcommittee that initially proposed the rule, and I wanted to thank everybody for all of their hard work. It's kind of funny. You wouldn't think these things are as difficult as they are to draft, propose, and then get to a point where you can actually have it move on down the line for approval from various different places. But it's really hard. There haven't been a lot of rules of courts that have been approved by the council in recent years, And to getting us through this process, it gets vetted many different ways in order for us to make sure that we're able to do it. And once again, I really have been struck by the historic nature of the rule, and it's something that we can be very proud of, that we have got to this point that we're going to be moving through and with a potential of a new rule of court that would be first in an area that is so important to all of us, that there be a complaint process that people, court users can utilize in order to bring to our attention if they're having problems obtaining language access. And that this is the first such type of complaint that and the courts are, a complaint process that the courts are making uniform anywhere, as far as I can tell, administratively, I think is something to be really proud of. So all those of you who worked on this, thank you so much for all of your efforts. Okay, Justice Cuellar.
Thank you, Judge Austin, for your summary and also especially for your work and your outreach with others to try to make this a reality. I will just highlight that there was that concern from JRS that was very serious, and we had to work hard to overcome it, but I'm especially happy that we have something before us that really moves the ball forward in a substantial way. We have a good bit of time for some questions and comments, so let me open the floor. If you would like to ask a question or make a comment either about Rule 8.50 or involving language access representatives, or 2.850 involving language access representatives, or 2.851 involving the complaint process, just identify yourself and we will hear your comment or question.
Yeah, this is Dennis Hayashi, and I just wanted to reemphasize the points that were made by Judge Austin with regard to how much work and input went into crafting the final draft of this rule. I mean, there were competing interests. I don't think there's any secret about that. And as has been indicated in the summary, there was a point when we thought we were going to be stopped entirely based on some concerns related to the amount of expense, as well as the devotion of resources involved in court by courts and their administrative staff to being trained and learning how to respond to the complaint forms. But I think that, as Judge Austin said, a number of individuals were very, very responsible for working with the other groups, such as the Rules Committee, et cetera, to massage some of the points. And I think that the points that have been raised in the last couple of days all are very, very good points. And I would say that we would probably be able to, as a matter of going forward, perhaps refer to those points and see whether we need to tweak these rules as we go along. But I think at this point, my feeling is that given the effort and, more importantly, the discussions that have taken place between not just our group, but with the Joint Rules Subcommittee and those representatives, I think this is really an outstanding effort, and I think that the draft we have before us is something that we should all feel very good about in terms of moving forward.
Judge Hayashi.
Hi, this is Lori. May I be heard briefly?
By all means, Lori.
I want to kind of underline what Dennis just said and express my agreement with it. I think that not only in light of all the work and all the careful dealing that has been done to do this, but in light of the commitments we have made to move things forward, that I would like to see us go forward with releasing this rule and then working on the remaining issues during the period as it goes forward. I think that keeping the faith on getting this out there is incredibly important, and that we are so close to a rule that really all of us can get behind, that we ought to move forward, and that certainly would be where I would be on this.
Thank you, Justice Elon. Other questions or comments?
Justice Cuellar, this is David Yamasaki. Can I be heard?
By all means, David.
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to commend Judge Austin and all of those folks that carefully evaluated the suggestions that were made to modify some of the language in the rules, and also recognizing the enormous challenges that the courts from an administrative perspective would have in adhering to some of the suggestions that may have been exceedingly restrictive or challenging to follow, but at the same time making some adjustments to the language that, in my view, preserves the motivation behind the establishment of those rules. And I think today we have proposed language that is much stronger than perhaps it was at the outset, with the intention being making sure that we recognize some of the challenges that we have in this area and the huge step that we're making going forward in improving an area that was appropriate for us to give some, you know, improvement in. So I am very supportive of that, and I'm willing to make a motion to approve the changes if this is the right time.
Thank you, David. Let me suggest that we hold off just a little bit to see if there are some other comments or questions, but I will circle back to you when, in my judgment, we reach that point, which may be soon.
Hi, this is Jose Varela. I was wondering if I could make a comment, and that
yes.
is the rule sort of seems to be set in place, and yet I hear comments from others on the committee that there could be possible changes in the future. And I was wondering whether it would be possible to include in this rule a process by which the local courts actually review their complaint procedures in such a way that they are utilizing best practices or learning from the community the needs of it. For example, it's in subsection B, it says complaint form and procedures required. It basically says, you know, they're supposed to create one a form that's consistent with this rule. I would like to see there in that procedure that there could be a review process on a yearly or twice or every 2 year basis to review the best practices for complaint forms and encourage superior courts to modify their local rules as necessary to best serve their communities. And I think that that allows the vitality of this rule to continue to be revisited in a lot of ways. And so I would just hope there would be something in the rule that allows for that kind of review. Otherwise, I think we could create a stagnant rule that may not be changed, you know, unless there's some bigger problem that is put forth.
Jose, let me address that. This is Tino Cuellar. I think you raise an excellent point, and let me associate myself with the idea that this rule should not be viewed as static. It needs to adapt and change over time, assuming that we approve recommending it, and it gets to RUPRO, and it gets to the Judicial Council. And I would just point out that if you read the purpose of the rule, that's subsection A, together with complaint form procedure and procedures required, B, one might fairly infer from that there is a kind of an understanding that we're doing this for a particular reason, and the reason we're doing this is one that requires some continuing effort on the part of trial courts to make sure that their procedures are good and sensible. And I would be very open to the extent that we can, and I believe we can do this, but to revising the report that accompanies the rule to convey that it is our hope and expectation, particularly given how we understand purpose and of this rule, that trial courts should continue to update their procedures as they learn. So you and I could even work on some language that we can incorporate in the report. My one thing that I'm a little reluctant to do, though, given how sensitive it's been to negotiate this with various different players over the last few months, is to reopen the rule's actual black letter at this point, particularly because I do think we can infer this notion of it's the responsibility of the Superior Court to come up with a process that is actually serving the needs of the community. So that would be my reaction, but I'm happy to reflect further and talk further offline. Other questions and comments?
And I would just note in response,
yeah.
That is sort of like legislative history that we sort of see sometimes in statutes.
Yes.
I think that with that kind of direction, I
yep.
think that we would be putting forth the point that I would be concerned about, you know, that it be a vital and robust statute. So
terrific.
I have no problem with the suggestion you've just made, Your Honor.
Thank you, Jose.
This is Kevin Baker. If I may just offer a few comments. I want to thank the members of the task force and the staff who have worked on this. There are many, as Steve Austin was indicating a moment ago. And I'm certainly happy to hear that there is a commitment to continue reviewing and working on this rule going forward. I'd certainly be happy to contribute to that effort. I agree, as you indicated at the outset, Ms. Cuellar, that this is really a linchpin in many ways for all of the work that we're doing. And I certainly appreciate that there are important internal stakeholders, and I guess I'm just concerned, as reflected in the comments that I submitted along with my colleagues Joanne Lee and Ana Maria Garcia, that I'm not sure that the proposed rule strikes the right balance, and therefore I can't vote for it as it exists right now. I certainly would be willing to approve something that I think addresses this concern. And let me just mention the one issue that I think is sort of most central here, and that is the English-only provision, which I think reflects a way of thinking that we're actually trying to change with the Language Access Plan. The adoption of a court process that is required to be only in English seems to me incongruous with the idea of the Language Access Plan. And I hope that issue can be addressed going forward, because I don't think it's what we're about here, and I'm concerned that we're not demonstrating the kind of leadership sending the kind of messages that we want to send about the importance of court processes and procedures being opened to people with limited English proficiency. In fact, I think we should expect that we're going to get complaints in languages other than English, and I'm concerned that if they're rejected, that could be the basis for further difficulties for us. So I'm hoping that there will be continuing effort in this area, but unfortunately I won't be able to vote for the proposal that is before us today.
Thank you, Kevin. This is Tino Cuellar again. Just a brief point of clarification, and I don't know that this will be enough to overcome your reluctance. I understand and I respect your view, of course, but I would just note that it does not seem to me that the rule as proposed has any English-only requirement. In fact, if you look at the top of the second page of the rule, so this is subsection C, subsection 6, it says that the complaint form must be, and I quote, made available in the languages spoken by significant proportions of the county population. Now, of course, implementing that will be challenging, and some counties might do that in slightly different ways. But I read that, and it's hard for me to imagine that it doesn't reflect the contemplation that at least some counties right off the bat would be in a position to try to absorb complaints that are made in different languages. Certainly nothing in the rule says that it has to be in English, and we could try to help clarify what we can, again, going back to the issue of the report. Now, I will acknowledge, just after some consultation with staff, that there was a sort of question that might have led to the language in the staff report documents accompanying the rule with respect to the significance of Code of Civil Procedure 185, Section 185, and its reference to written proceedings having to be in English. But we can look into that. And I would just note for the moment that I share the spirit of the concern that it would not make sense to have a rule that requires people who are complaining about their inability to speak English make that complaint in English, but by the same token, I recognize there probably has to be some flexibility county by county, and I also would just point out that the rule itself doesn't say that it has to be English only. Judge Austin, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I think it's a concern, and I can definitely understand the concern. I notice in reading through the rule, it doesn't require that it be in English, but it doesn't say that it's required the other side to accept in other languages. And I some to a certain degree, I kind of see this as once we get the rule in place and the council approves it and things roll out, and maybe it's because I have been doing this so long, I have like this long-range view of the world when it comes to anything having to do with language access issues, that we see how it goes, and if this presents to be a problem that people are submitting in other languages and they're being rejected, perhaps we could have a 2.0 version at some point in time and go forward. And I think with some of the other concerns that were expressed in the email that you sent, Kevin, I think those are things that we might want to be looking at into the future. Once we get this complaint process rule in place to be able to help us move forward. So
that makes sense, Steve, and I'll just simply add in closing in response to Kevin's comment and, you know, again to acknowledge the thoughtful concerns that have been raised. I do think that even before that, I would want to work with staff to see how far we can go, at least in describing the content of this rule and what it provides for and what flexibility it gives trial courts, because I do think the concern is a real one, and either way, I want us to keep working on it.
If I may, this is Joanne Lee from
the Legal Aid Foundation
of LA, and I also want to say that I'm very appreciative of all the efforts made by everyone who worked on this, and I don't want to undermine them in any way. I acknowledge that a lot of progress has been made, and I also hope to continue to help in any way, but I just want to echo the comments made by Kevin. I think it's extremely difficult for LEP litigants to even think about coming forward to make complaints. I mean, I've had litigants who I have encouraged to make complaints, and they simply don't want to. And I feel like some of the concerns that we raised, they're not being, an explicit directive to the local courts to accept complaints in other languages presents a tremendous barrier. So I know that, you know, I agree that the rule itself is unclear, but I think it's important that there be something very specific that that allows local courts to take complaints in other languages, and just also having them made available in languages that are appropriate for those local geographical areas.
Thank you, Joanne. Duly noted. Any last comments about this?
Yeah, this is Terry Breers, and I just wanted to kind of echo what Judge Austin had to say. Having been through this RUPRO rules procedure many times with many committees over the years, you know, one, this is a dynamic process. Two, RUPRO is highly sensitive to any rules that impose additional burdens on the trial court, so that I think our alternative is between the proposal we have or no rule or at least another rule cycle. These rules are dynamic. They go through revisions regularly. We will have the opportunity to put forward amendments or modifications once we have some experience with the rules. But as I said, I think those are all our alternatives at the moment.
Thank you, Justice Berniers. Hearing no other comments. Yes. Yes?
Yeah, this is Tracy Clark. Can I just...
Oh, hi, Tracy. Go ahead, please. Yes.
Hi. Just because I just want to clarify for anybody, it talks about if there is a complaint that alleges action against a court employee, there is an MOU that is to follow. And if there's a complaint that may require corrective action toward an interpreter, especially that may include revoking the interpreter's status as certified or registered, that will refer to the Judicial Council's court interpreters. As an interpreter, the idea that someone could complain anonymously and it could endanger my certification without me being able to even know who it was or what the incident was and being able to respond is a scary thing. And I think I just want to recognize that we realize it, and this is not where this is going for any interpreters listening, that we will be working for independence and any people that the court brings in, interpreters, that they will have a way to be fairly heard if there is a complaint, that the goal of this is for everybody to get the appropriate language access and not in any way to leave one group of interpreters out, and that we'll work through that with the court interpreters program and various other stages, but it's not clear in here, and I didn't want people to worry. Is that an appropriate thing to call attention to now? And if it's not, I apologize.
Yes, it is. No, yes, it is, and I appreciate the comment very much.
Thank you.
So let me call on David Yamasaki, who had earlier volunteered to make a motion, if he is still so inclined, with respect to approval of Rule 2.851, which concerns the language access complaint process for recommendation by this task force to RuPro and the Judicial Council.
Yes, Justice Cuellar, I restate my motion to approve this rule change as expressed.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Dennis Hayashi, second.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. Any further discussion?
Justice
hearing
Cuellar,
none? Yes, I'm Eric, hearing one Eric. Voice. Go ahead.
Sorry, this is Douglas. I think we need a motion to approve both rules.
We need a motion to approve both rules, but I would like to do those motions separately, if that's okay, because people might have different views about those two rules. So I will not end the call without also asking for a motion with respect to 2.850, but I, unless there's a strong reason to do it, otherwise I'd prefer to do them separately. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of approving Rule 2.851, please say aye.
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 Thank
aye.
You. Thank you. All those against?
No, this is Kevin Baker.
Okay. Thank you. Duly noted. Anyone else?
This is Joanne Lee. I also respectfully vote no.
Thank you. Understood.
Janet Hudek votes no.
Okay. Thank you. Any other no's? Any abstentions? Okay, hearing none, we are going now to Rule 2.850. This involves language access representatives. Do I have a motion to have the task force approve and recommend this rule?
Conklin, move to approve.
I'm sorry, who was the first one again?
Judge Conklin.
Judge Conklin. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Do I hear a second?
Second, Yamasaki.
Perfect, thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of Rule 2.850, please say aye.
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 Any against? Okay, thank you. Hearing none, I will convey my appreciation to the whole task force for a robust and thoughtful discussion, which not only has given us a good sense of where the task force is on the nuances as well as the big picture, but also gives us some helpful input to try to start addressing what concerns exist, even in the task force write-up, if we can, the Judicial Council report, and to continue to work on these issues, as we move forward. With that, we still have a little bit of time, and I'd like to move quickly to the next issue, which is the last issue of business we have. And I will introduce it briefly. We've also been working in parallel on legislative language that is meant to help us address the question of how language access is supposed to work in small claims proceedings. So, again, consistent with a recommendation in the language access plan, recommendation number 71, we are proposing as a task force, if we approve this, to delete a provision of the government code and to try to clarify that even in small claims proceedings, there is a need for language access. And here, too, we've had the thread the needle. We have been working very closely with Judge Covarrubias and Judge Austin and others with the Small Claims Advisory Committee and have come up with language that we hope you will consider. And let me turn it over to Judge Covarrubias.
Thank you, Justice Cuellar. Again, in April, the task force prepared the draft proposed invitation to comment to amend Government Code Section 68560, subsection A, and also Code of Civil Procedure 116.550, again, to remove that deletion and have it provide that, again, in small claims that certified registered interpreters would be provided by the court. The PCLC committee approved our invitation to comment, went out for a public comment. That was from April through June, mid-June of 2016. In October of 2016, the task force again approved a revised proposal to go to PCLC. However, at that point, there was some concerns raised by the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee. And in conjunction with the instructions from Judicial Council, that any time we're suggesting any proposals that we collaborate with those other subcommittees to make sure that we're all on board. We formed a working group along with the members of the Civil Small Claims Advisory Committee to see about resubmitting a proposal on that small claims legislation, again, concerns being raised concerning the proposal that we had made. We had several conference calls over the past few months toward reaching an agreement, and I'm pleased to say that our most recent call on July 13th, members of the working group came to a consensus on the revised text of the Code of Civil Procedure, 116.550. Those are in your materials, and the proposed changes are on pages 47 and 48 of the materials that were sent out. I would indicate I really appreciate having the support of Judge Cadet, who is the chair of that committee. We did have an opportunity to meet and discuss, and very supportive of the work that the language, the Implementation Task Force has been doing, and very supportive of increasing language access to all court users, especially those in small claims. The proposed amendments do provide for interpreters to be used in small claim hearings, and that the court be required to attempt to secure a certified, registered, or provisionally qualified interpreter, just as in all other areas that we have sought expansion to. There is a provision that allows a court to utilize for the temporary interpreter, and also includes that the definition of a temporary interpreter to be provided similar to that which CF has been working on, has developed a rule, and that's rule 2.893 that gives some specific guidance to the use of temporary interpreters and what is a temporary one-time use interpreter. That rule change is scheduled to go into effect in January of 2018. It also contains some advisory comments indicating the use of a temporary interpreter is not to be the default process for a court to utilize, but only use those in certain circumstances where primarily designed to use that one time where you have a litigant who's maybe coming in. And we know many litigants many times travel at this point up to 3-4 hours to get to court, with not having knowledge that there's a need for an interpreter, and the litigant wishes to go forward, and having a rather non-complex, relatively simple matter to be provided, and they may have provided their own individual, but still make sure the court goes through that process and making sure that whatever individual is to be used to act as an interpreter for that one-time proceeding, that they are sufficiently qualified to provide that interpretation, and there's a form that's been developed to help and give guidance to the court. So with working on that in your materials, again, the proposed rule changes 2.893 are found on pages 49 through 54 of your the materials for today. It does, again, we'll be going through the government affairs staff on a timeline for the revisions that may be necessary, as, again, there may need to be some tinkering to Rule 2.893. It's similar that was discussed before. When there's changes to be made, there need to be some changes made to make sure that we're consistent with CCP 116.550 as proposed. If the task force approves the proposal today, then upon the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee also approving the proposal at its scheduled meeting on August 16, then the invitation comment will move forward. Well, that'll be taking place on mid-September of 2017. And if the PCLC approves our proposal, the invitation for comment will go out for possibly 1 month. Stanford will then have the opportunity to respond to public comments submitted on the revised proposal, and the task force have to approve the proposal again, any proposal amendments to it, before it goes back to PCLC, for hopefully be on the council's agenda in January of 2018. And if legislation adopted in place, it's hoped again that it will be effective as of January 2019. Just as in the prior work that we did with the other committees, there was some negotiation being done, trying to accommodate, again, the expansion, take into account and the needs the different courts have and their crisis they all have with budget and other challenges they have to securing certified and registered interpreters for all proceedings. But I think it also, again, is in line with removing that exception small claims, recognizing that individuals in small claims have significant issues they bring before the court and that need to be properly heard and given a meaningful opportunity to be heard with an appropriate certified interpreter, again, being the preference. That's the report. You have the materials, and I hope if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer any questions that may be put forth.
Thank you, Judge Covarrubias. Do we have any questions or comments? Okay, I'll just add briefly that to underscore that this whole process of getting stuff changed in our branch is a process that requires both patience and determination. So as you could see from the previous rules we discussed as well as these changes, there are so many steps and lots of people to consult with. And here, just to underscore something Judge Covarrubias said, we're simply approving this to go out for public comment. It will have to come back here after that. We'll have a chance to weigh how to take account of the comments, and then it will have to work its way through again. But we can't even get to that if we don't approve it now. And I do think that even getting it to the point where it can get public comment has taken some effort, and I'm grateful for the effort that has been put in on that score. So hearing no questions or comments, I want to see if anyone has a motion that we approve the draft proposal and make it available for public comment.
Conklin, move to approve.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Walsh, second.
Thank you. Conklin moves and Walsh seconds. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay. Any against? Any abstentions? Thank you. The motion carries. All right. Let me wind down. We have been productive at this meeting, but we've only been productive at this meeting because of all the work the task force and the staff has done to get us to this point. I'm grateful. I know that people on the call feel the same sense of urgency that I do. To date, we have completed outright 24 of the 75 LAP recommendations. But you know our plan, and you know that these recommendations don't come all in one size. Some take a lot more time and energy to approve and to get implemented than others. So I'm really pleased that we've made this progress, but I want us to not lose momentum. The task force had a 3 to 5 years charge, and before us still are big challenges involving resources, VRI, best practices, planning for the future. So we're going to be working on all of that in the days to come. In the meantime, I want to emphasize that Judge Covarrubias has agreed to lead a new working group that has one member designated from each of our four subcommittees and will be looking at some of these recommendations that we have not been able to get to yet, including many that require medium to long-term effort, effort that might require the branch to be deeply engaged in the work beyond the life of this task force. So he'll be working on this, and I'll be making sure that he gets the support that he needs. Please work closely with your subcommittee chairs and staff on the 2017 annual agenda projects so we continue making progress. And do not hesitate to let me or Judge Covarrubias know if you have any questions. Thank you. I'm grateful. The meeting is adjourned, and enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The host has left the meeting, so at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.